Janice Nix used to be a notorious London drug dealer known as Mama J. She drove flash cars and had money to burn. Her crimes caught up with her, though, and she spent many years in prison, turning her life around, and she went on to become a probation officer. She's written it all in a book called Breaking Out. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from somewhere in the UK. Janice Nix. Janice, good morning to you.
Good morning, Jazz. Good morning, pretty, sunny. Is it Marbella?
Well, we're the whole of Spain. I mean, we're based just outside Marbella.
Okay, lovely. Nice greetings. Thank you, guys. I am in Clapham.
Ah, beautiful, sunny downtown Clapham.
It's not too bad here. It's not too bad at all.
So tell me a little bit about, because, you know, I get handed press notes, and when it says things like, you know, the notorious drug dealer who turned herself around and a tale of redemption, which obviously it is. Tell me a little bit about your background then and how you became involved and because were you originally brought up in Leicester?
I was originally born in London.
Right.
In Ladbroke Grove. But the first thing I'd like to clear up, Giles.
Yeah.
I've noticed that the term probation officer has been branded. I was never a probation officer. I was initially employed as an engagement worker, and then I was promoted to a probation service officer.
Right.
Which is a totally different role. A probation officer role, you have to study, go to university, you have to work for that role. My role is more of an engaging role where I engage with service users that have disengaged from this, from the probation service and from their service order, and it's re-engaging them. That's what my role is.
My apologies, I was misinformed then.
That's fine. I hear it all the time. So I like to let people know I was not a probation officer, because we have had people saying, oh, she did train for that. No, I was never a probation officer, the probation service officer.
So tell me a little bit about your early life then, and we'll talk about, you know, your career up until, shall we say, the mid-80s, start of the 90s?
Right. I'm from Caribbean background. My parents came from Antigua. My mum and dad came here in 56, 57. Very, very difficult time when they first came to England to live. I was born in the 58, what they call the baby boomer. And life for us in Ladbroke Grove was awful. Amongst mum and dad struggling to make a life for us, we became latchkey kids. We were left to our own thing. And mum had to go to work, dad go to work. So we just got on doing our stuff. I then drifted into naughty things like stealing sweets from shops. And then the breakdown of my mum and dad's relationship came, and mum took us away to live in the Caribbean, which was a huge change and challenge for me, because I'd never been to the Caribbean before. But what I quickly noticed in the Caribbean was life was completely different to England. We can't be as cheeky out there like we are here.
Right.
There was this stark difference about respect and showing elders your respect. And I gravitated to that. I liked that. Back in London, we were sort of, don't do that. He kept me saying, don't do that and don't do this. Anyway, come back from Antigua. I went off into my own little thing, because by then now I'm a teenager. I'm starting to attract male attention, and it's unwanted male attention. But not being told how to handle that is very difficult. Now I look back, I understand my mother's upbringing, which is why she didn't have the tools to equip me with the challenges I would face in life later on. I moved on from there. I ran away from home. I come to London to live. And in your mind as a child, you get on a train and say, I'm going to London. You have no concept of time. You know, have no concept of travel and how long it's going to take. So me with my bright idea that I'm going to run away from home, there was no plan. I got on a train, sneaked on a train, and got off at King's Cross. I walked onto this massive concourse and thinking, oh, my God, this is not Leicester. I can get lost. And sometimes in life you have paths, people coming to your life. And that moment when I got off that train from Leicester, I knew nobody. I knew my father lived in London, but where? Somewhere in London. Ah, yes, Ealing. How do I get there? I've got no money. And then a young lady looks at me and I don't know what she saw, but she saw something that told her to take care of me or to look after me. And she did, took me, look after me. But then I became engulfed in her world. That's the only thing I know.
Right.
And I've gone off into learning how to shoplift. And I remember the first night I spent with her, I'm accustomed to washing my knickers at night and put it on the radiator and let it dry. And she was like, oh, don't worry about that. We'll get some in the morning. I was thinking, okay, rah. We went out, we got food and everything. But I didn't realize, I was too busy looking around London. I've never been in London before. So I was going to say, you meet people and you drift into situations that you think, okay, this is the way you need to go. If you wanted to go right, as I have tried to explain many times, there was nobody there to tell you, yes, it's okay, we can train you, or we can do this, and we can do that. It's not until you get on that revolving door of crime, then you have things thrown at you in 4 weeks, 6 weeks. Oh, you can do a training in prison, or you can do this in prison. When you come out is the real world. And when you come out, there is not many organizations that have a through care system that will take care of you and show you how to do things. For me, my changing point came when I got my last prison sentence. And it hit me because my father was ill and didn't really want to have anything to do. And my mother had died. My mom was my rock. And I had a young child, a young teenager. And my initial thoughts were, how am I going to manage my teenager who is under strict guidance, under my guardianship? How am I going to do this in prison? So I had to start thinking fast. And the solution I came up with was to get my daughter to her father in the United States. I did that, but going through life in prison, I had to start facing my kind of reality. I had to look at what it is that I ran away from. I didn't want to get involved. I didn't want to see. And I just put my head into a different way of living. And I had to go back and face the demons that made me run away. The sexual abuse, the drinking, because you start drinking at a young age and then you drink just to blot out stuff. That's why today I can identify with many young people that go on the same path and start drinking. Everybody is medicating, self-medicating a problem. It wasn't until I got to 48 and in prison, I became a listener and I started to listen to other women and their issues. I started to recognize my own issues within those issues. I started to recognize the reasons what held me back in society, the fact that society wouldn't allow me to go through and be the person I wanted to be. And I wanted to be the person to help. When I was in my drugs life, even though it was wrong, But I had women around me that I used to support. I wouldn't say I'm a Robin Hood or a Maid Marian, but I wanted to help. I wanted them to shine in their way. And I felt maybe by helping them with their children, paying school fees, doing little things like that, I felt I was helping them and letting them stop what they're doing, not realizing I'm doing something that I shouldn't be doing. But when you hit rock bottom, Giles, you go to a place of deep thought. And now my life is about rectifying. I can't rectify my past. It's impossible. But I know the challenges that I face as a black woman with a criminal record to get to where I am today. I understand those challenges. But I'm here as evidence and proof it can be done. Doors and ceilings have to be kicked in for people to recognize I am changed.
It's when an... Sorry, Jazz, I just want to come. Because it would be very easy for yourself as a black person growing up in the '70s in London, not a lot of opportunities, and then going to prison, and a lot of people go and do sentences and become institutionalized. I mean, there is a way of living that becomes strangely familiar for them, and it is the most difficult thing to break out of that. So why did you think, and you were, I mean, I've seen descriptions of you, was it the best known thing on the Brixton High Road? And I used to live in Brockwell Park, so I know that road quite well. So what was, I mean, why do you think there was deep down you hit some sort of mother node of that upbringing that your parents had had in Antigua, and you just decided to get your life together?
I don't know. I think I looked at everything, Giles. It was the people that I had come to London and grown up around. It was my past. It was everything. And I just felt there were so many of us that are here that are talented, that want to do this, but we're not afforded that opportunity. I got a job while I was in prison. I worked for the NHS in Surrey. And I remained with them for 5 years and 9 months. And I saw a job advertised in London at a major hospital, applied for the job and got the job. And after 3 months, Giles, I was sacked because I was told my DBS is not that of a customer care officer. What does that mean? You employed me on the strength of my job in Surrey, 5 years, nearly 6 years, and on the back of letters of reference from consultants, conductors. And now you're telling me my DBS mattered?
The thing is, though, people will look, you know, yours is a story of getting your life back on track, but people will look in a society where everything is run by a computer. If you flag up that you've got a criminal conviction or something, had a brush, then people don't give you the opportunity to make amends, as it were.
And they don't give you the opportunity to amend your criminal record, because the majority of my criminal record started from back in 1974. I'm 62 years old now, Giles, and at least 15 years is working record from I've come out of prison. Why is a crime that I committed in 1976 on my DBS?
How important do you think you have been in getting other prisoners to engage? Because obviously, you know, when you're in prison, you don't get visited by a lot of outside professionals, but there are some people. I mean, there are, you know, you've got to go up before the parole board, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think that your experience, because you had been there and done that at quite a high level, if you like, gave it more stead and gave more encouragement? Because I've spoken to people who have been in young offenders institutes and gone back. Michael Macy, who I interviewed, who, you know, went, you know, got clean, came out, went back in, and now advises, you know, young offenders on drug and alcohol abuse. Do you think that the fact that you were at, you know, you were notorious, shall we say, in South London, kind of gave it some sway because you knew what you were talking about and you'd been there?
No. What I feel was my lived experience fueled people. When I told young women at my group, I had a group in Croydon that I ran for a while, and when they're told to go to a group, they think, oh, yeah, another group. Yeah, all right, then. And they sit there and they look at you and you're talking to them and said, listen, I cannot tell you how I feel, but I can associate my feelings with your travel, my journey. And by the time you say I've spent 17 and a half years in prison and then mouth hits the ground, they sort of think, what? When you read my book, the book, which reminds me, Giles, you must send your address, must send your signed copy.
Thank you.
When you read the book, no problem. When you read the book, you will see there is a particular girl that I worked with. Her name is Izzy. And Izzy was a heroin addict. Young girl, beautiful girl. And Izzy could not see the beauty in herself. It's about letting these women see working within their self. We're all born into this world expecting to be princesses or women of challenge. We want to be something in the world when we're younger. I want to be a doctor. I want to be a nurse. I want to be a fireman. We all have ambitions. We need to reawaken those ambitions within women, within men as well, and find out what is the problem, what stops them from moving forward. There needs to be more discussion. You can't throw somebody into a program to do a 6 weeks program because the court ordered it and you haven't cleaned up their mind. Some of these people are complexly challenged by their past. And until you unravel the past, that's when you're going to help them to move forward.
The problem is, Jez, that takes time and commitment and money. And that is something that in the current environment, people would claim we don't have enough of. And it's much easier to say to people, you know, oh, just lock them up. They're good, persistent offenders.
Yeah, but, Charles, we have women coming out of prison that are coming out discharged with a tent. What's that all about? Why haven't we got women hostels then? Why isn't the government? We've got one hostel in London. One. London. We're the smallest population that make up prison population, but we're the highest suicide rate. Why? We need more discussions. We need more discussions about where we are going and how we can be supported. Women go to prison with one whole heap of complex issues, drugs, alcohol, past issues, present issues, their children, social services on their case and all their charges. And they've got to fight through all that tangled web that's being weaved to find out how they're going to proceed when they come out. We have to start something with them. Because until you unravel their complex issues, we can't get them moving forward in some sort of direction.
So why did you decide the time was right to... Were you already planning the book before lockdown? Did you write it over lockdown?
Oh, no, no. Giles, this book came about when I started work at London Probation. And I had a young man who would ask me every single day, can you tell me a story? And I'm saying, go away. I can't tell you these things. And he was that nice, annoying boy. I took him on as my godson. And one afternoon he said to me, Janice, have you ever thought of writing a book? I said, you don't be so silly. I said, I can't write my BS and put it in a book. Are you crazy? And he said, I think you should. I left that office in 2015. Did the circuit, was in Bromley, all over the place, and ended up back in Brixton office, where I met this young man again. And he asked me the same question again, but this time he invited me for lunch. Went out to lunch, and I met this young lady, tall, blonde lady. I'm thinking, uh-oh, who are you now? Anyway, I sat down, and Ed's gone to me, oh, Janice, remember I told you about writing a book? I said, yeah, yeah, what are you saying? He said, this is the writer. And I sort of went, oh, okay. And she started writing down little bits and pieces and she introduced herself. And then about a month went by. She rang me up and she said, Janice, would you mind coming to a meeting with me to see my agent? So I sort of went into, what do I want to see your agent for? What for? And she said, oh, it's just something that I've written and I showed it to my agent and he liked it. So he would like to meet you. I still had no clue what was going on. I went to meet this young man who I can only describe as a big version of Harry Potter. And yeah, David Ryden, an amazing, amazing man, beautiful young man. And he invited me into his office and he said to me, tell me about yourself. So I sat there chatting away and telling him what I did, because to me it's just normal. And he sat there with his hands cupped in his mouth, at his mouth, and he said, Liz, Giles, you would have to have seen the scene. Because it was like I was completely out of the way. Nobody was talking to me. And then Liz and David were having this conversation.
And Liz is the writer,
about
yeah?
Where this book should be, yeah. And I'm sitting there looking at them and thinking, why nobody are chatting to me? Nobody chatting to me. Well, hello? And then David sort of looked at me and he went, oh, Janice, yes. We'll get back to you. Okay, cool. Left. The following week, I was inundated with interviews from Mayo Books, Simon & Schuster, HarperCollins, all sorts of stuff. And I was just like, so what are we going to do? How am I going to write this? Because now I'm panicking. How am I going to write it? I talk in West Indian dialect. I do this. How are they going to put all that down in a book? But believe you me, Giles, we did it. We did it. And I am very, very proud today that Breaking Out can be used as a guide, a way that people can understand how change comes about. And you have to get yourself, everybody is ready for change, but everybody's not ready for change at the same time. And we have to learn to be patient with other people to arrive at the same destination as you. And that's how I live my life. Yeah. I do not hurry anybody because everybody took me a long time. It took me more than some people say, oh, you should have learned your lesson the first time. No. Sometimes you have to keep hitting your head on the brick wall until you get it. And then you sit back and say, what was I doing? Now I think, what the hell was I doing? But without that journey, Giles, I could be on this phone talking to you in the front room while you are in the sun looking at your son and I'm looking at the murky trees. Yeah. So I am grateful that I was able to be given that platform to talk about things that I feel need to happen in society and, yeah, in our lives as human beings to one another. If we can't do anything at all, Giles, passing on information to help somebody to move from A to B, something simple as giving somebody a wake-up call in the morning is helping somebody to get organized for their day. That's how I look at life now.
The book is called Breaking Out. The unbelievable, inspirational true story of a former Class A drug dealer who became a probation worker. That's what it says in the thing. That's what I'm reading out. It's by Janice Nix. I'm glad we got your laugh in there, Janice. Janice, if people want to find out more about you or about the book, I mean, do you have a website? Do you do social media? Where can people get in touch with you?
At the moment, I am so crap on social media, but you can always go onto HarperCollins UK website. I have a Facebook page. It's just Janice Nix. Go on there. You'll see my mush on the front of the page or you'll see the book. Yeah. And at some stage, I don't know when, I don't know how, but I'm coming out there to Spain. I need to see Spain.
Absolutely. We will be more than happy to see it. Janice, it's been an absolute pleasure. You didn't swear once and we just got a bit of the laugh too. So
I was forewarned.
So I'm more than happy. Janice Nix, author of Breaking Out, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Giles. Thank you. And good morning, Spain. Thank you.